It's January 6th, 2021, and this is Markets Daily from CoinDesk. I'm Adam B. Levine, here again with Adrian Bluss for your daily news roundup. On today's show, we're talking Bitcoin, traditional markets, and the hurdles still to overcome for stablecoins. And just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Bitcoin fell below $43,000 and breached a key support level after U.S. central bank minutes revealed a more hawkish than expected tilt on inflation. Other top cryptocurrencies, including Polkadot and Solana, tanked on Thursday, driven by a broader sell-off. In the last 24 hours, crypto futures worth $812 billion were liquidated as Bitcoin broke its $46,000 support level and fell to $43,000, according to data from analytics tool CoinGlass. A drop in Bitcoin prices led to altcoin markets seeing deep cuts. Over 200,000 positions were liquidated in the last 24 hours, with the bulk of the losses coming during U.S. hours. Wednesday's plunge came shortly after the release of the minutes of the December meeting of the U.S. Federal Reserve. The agency revealed it would slowly reduce its $8.3 trillion balance sheet in 2022, unwinding some of the purchases from the record asset buying program initiated in 2020. Adding to market pressures were indications that the Bitcoin blockchain's hash rate, that's the gauge of the network's computational security, fell amid protests in Kazakhstan, which brought a nationwide internet blackout. The country has become one of the biggest destinations for crypto mining operations following last year's exodus from China. Bitcoin dropped as low as $42,500 in Asian hours on Thursday morning, after trading above $47,000 on Wednesday. Traders took $317 million worth of losses on Bitcoin-tracked futures alone, with 87% of those positions betting on upward price movements. Quote, "Support levels are cushions, not precise points, so we would make sure breakdowns are confirmed on a consecutive closing basis before acting on them. Secondary support for Bitcoin is near $37,400, and for Ether near $3,284," Katie Stockton, founder of Fairlead Strategies, said. But other analysts suggest there isn't much evidence of a rebound in the near future. Quote, "For a few weeks now, we've been clearly in a downtrend, and there are no signs of a decisive reversal in sight. However, striking similarities between the current price action and market moves between mid-May and August do give reasons for cautious optimism in the medium term. A bounce to around $47,000 in the next few days could corroborate that thesis, while further losses would largely invalidate it," said the executive director of ARK36. Among the top 10 cryptocurrencies by market capitalization, the tokens of Ethereum rivals Avalanche, Terra, and Solana, the so-called Soloon AVAX trade, fell as much as 12% in the past 24 hours. Polkadot, another Ethereum rival, saw its token fall by 14% before seeing a slight revival in Asian hours on Thursday. Tokens of these networks have risen by triple-digit percentages in the past year, mainly as investors looked for blockchain alternatives outside of Ethereum. Polkadot's token found support around the $25 level, one that's previously acted as resistance. Falling into these prices could mean a drop to just over $20 where the next support exists. Solana's token fell from the support level of $167 to $144 during Asian hours on Thursday, temporarily reaching prices last seen in October of last year. The $130 to $140 range remains crucial for the Solana token, according to the charts. Falling below that range, the token could drop to as low as $78 if previous resistance levels are considered. Today's crypto coverage comes from CoinDesk's markets analysts, Amkar Godbole, Shaoria Mawa, and managing editor of markets, Brett Cowan. Bitcoin is currently trading at $43,031. That's down 7.25% in the last 24 hours, while Ether is trading at $3,395. That's down almost 11% in the same time period, according to the CoinDesk Price Index. In traditional markets, technology stocks were poised for further losses as the prospect of increases to official interest rates briefly pushed treasury yields to their highest level since the start of the pandemic. Futures for the tech-focused NASDAQ 100 fell just over half a point on Thursday. And yesterday, on Wednesday, the NASDAQ index posted its biggest daily loss since February of 2021, after minutes of the Federal Reserve's most recent meeting showed officials eyeing a faster timetable for raising rates than previously disclosed. Shares of Tesla, Apple, Netflix, and Uber fell by 1% or more in pre-market trading, while bank stocks such as Bank of America and JP Morgan got a boost from rising yields. Futures for the S&P 500 were flat, while contracts of the Dow Jones Industrial rose by 0.2%. The U.S. central bank's acceleration also had an impact on European equities, with a broad market sell-off. The regional Stoxx 600 index dropped 1.2%. In London, the FTSE 100 fell 0.7%, and Germany's DAX lost 1.1%. Almost all sectors of the Stoxx index fell on Thursday, with tech companies, industrial groups, and basic materials businesses getting the worst of it. Bank shares were up there, as in the U.S., with expectations that lenders would get a win from higher borrowing costs. Today's traditional markets coverage draws from the Wall Street Journal and the FT. Stay tuned for after the break, and we'll take a look at Western Union's business model with stablecoins on the rise. Back in a minute.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's featured story is an opinion piece from J.P. Koning, a CoinDesk columnist who also runs the popular Moneyness blog. Today's piece is entitled, Should Western Union Worry About Stablecoins? Remittances are small transfers, usually $1,000 or less, that people living in diaspora make to loved ones back home. These payments have become a vital form of survival, not only for families left behind, but also for the developing countries themselves, which over the years have received shrinking amounts of development assistance and direct investment. Total remittances have reached $589 billion this year, according to the World Bank. At the moment, stablecoins are used mostly in the speculative crypto economy, not the bricks and mortars economy. Cryptocurrency exchanges that lack access to the banking system rely on stablecoins such as Tether or USDC as substitute proto-dollar accounts, you might call them. Stablecoins also serve as the building blocks for decentralized finance tools. Significant real-world usage of stablecoins, particularly remittances, would be a big get for the stablecoin sector. But there are some big challenges to address before that can happen. To be fair, crypto does already serve as a remittance vehicle, albeit a niche one. In a recent paper, economists found that the lower bound of 1.3% of all trades on local bitcoins, a peer-to-peer exchange, were related to usage of Bitcoin for cross-border payments. The authors note that Bitcoin remittances often involve countries like Nigeria that have exchange controls, which Bitcoin is useful for evading. The advantage that stablecoins have over Bitcoin is that they don't suffer from Bitcoin's wild volatility. Indeed, remittance company MoneyGram is currently experimenting with them. But the first of the two major hurdles to ubiquitous stablecoin remittances is the double hop problem. So let's get into it. Much of the world lives in a bank account world. Our salaries arrive to our bank accounts. We purchase our necessities like shelter or food with a debit card or bank transfer. We earn money in cash and buy stuff with physical currency. But no one lives in a stablecoin world. And except for a few privileged denizens of the crypto economy, no one receives a salary in stablecoins. Certainly no one buys supper with them. And using a crypto-linked payment card to make purchases doesn't count, since these cards sell crypto for fiat at the last instant and pay with bank money. This is the core of the problem. For most of the world's remittance users, a stablecoin remittance forces them to temporarily leave their preferred financial environment. A sender must jump out of cash or bank accounts onto stablecoin rails. The person who receives the stablecoins must then hop back into the world of bank accounts or physical cash. These extra hops are inconvenient. First, they require a certain level of technical and financial expertise to expedite. No internet access? Forget about it. Secondly, they're expensive. A hop into and out of stablecoins doubles the foreign currency exchange transaction fees involved in remitting money. In her recent testimony to the U.S. Senate, financial regulatory expert Alexis Goldstein crunched how much the stablecoin double hop costs. Using the U.S. to Europe remittance corridor as her example, Goldstein found that a remittance sender in the U.S. who buys $200 worth of Tether stablecoin with dollars on Coinbase must pay a fee of $2.99. The $200 is then sent to the European recipient, who must pay $2.99 on Coinbase to sell their Tether for euros. That's already $6 in fees. And the numbers didn't include slippage, the gap between the bid and ask price for Tether on Coinbase, which amplifies the all-in cost of a stablecoin remittance. By contrast, a traditional $200 remittance carried out by Wise, MoneyGram, or Western Union is just a single-hop transaction. Dollars must be sold for euros, and that's it. A single-hop will always be cheaper than a double-hop. But there's more to it than that. The double-hop problem that bedevils stablecoin remittances is compounded by the user fee problem. Platforms like Ethereum that are based on proof-of-work require that crypto miners be paid a fee to validate transactions. At the time of this writing, it would cost me a whopping $23 in mining fees to transfer $100 of USDP stablecoins that I own. That's an awfully pricey remittance. The user fee problem can be avoided by dispatching stablecoin remittances over Ethereum's emerging Layer 2 architecture, say the Optimism or Polygon protocols. However, graduating stablecoins from the main level of Ethereum over to Layer 2 and back down again incurs costly mining fees. It's also technically complex and takes time. Competing blockchains like Tron, Avalanche, and Solana offer an alternative route for avoiding Ethereum's user fee problem. These blockchains rely on proof of stake for security, which is much cheaper than proof of work. But even if the parties to a remittance manage to route a stablecoin in a way that minimizes the user fee problem, the nagging double hop problem remains. The jump into stablecoins and back out again will always be more costly than a single hop remittance. A few developments might minimize the double hop problem and help make stablecoin remittances more competitive than regular ones. So let's talk about that. One way to solve the double hop problem would be a tighter fusion between stablecoins and bank accounts. If banks allowed customers to automatically withdraw stablecoins from their account without a fee, like we already do for cash, and also freely deposit stablecoins, then people making stablecoin remittances would no longer have to pay double the fees. For example, say that Manuel, an immigrant living in the US, wants to send money to Maria in Honduras. He'd start by withdrawing $200 in Wells Fargo approved stablecoins from his Wells Fargo bank account for free. He then sends them to Maria, who deposits the $200 worth of stablecoins directly into her Honduran bank account at no charge. Maria then asks her bank to convert the funds into Honduran currency so she can pay rent. This foreign exchange swap is the only transaction in the entire circuit that incurs a bank fee. While no-fee bank-to-stablecoin transactions would allow for cheaper remittances, it's not evident that these options will ever emerge. Banks don't want to lose business to stablecoin issuers, after all, unless they themselves are the issuers of the stablecoins. A second way to minimize the double hop problem would be to increase the number of real-world situations where stablecoins are accepted. If Manuel's real-world U.S. salary was paid in stablecoins, say Tether, then he wouldn't have to do a U.S. dollar to Tether conversion when he sends his remittance to Maria. Alternatively, if Maria could purchase food and other basics with stablecoins, then she wouldn't have to do a stablecoin to local currency conversion. Broadening the range of real-world stablecoin transactions is not as easy as it sounds. What makes a payments network useful is the fact that other people are already connected to it. Lacking an initial set of users, a new payment network's chances of breaking through are tiny. If real-world acceptance of stablecoins is unlikely to occur, there is a third way towards stablecoin ubiquity. Increase the amount of people inhabiting the nascent crypto economy. Right now, the crypto economy is occupied by crypto fans, speculators, and people who work in the industry. If there were more things to do in the crypto economy, entertainment, job opportunities, socializing, then people would increasingly immigrate, you might call it there, from the real world. New arrivals would be obliged to adopt the de facto payment standard, that's stablecoins. If Bob, who occupies one region of the crypto economy, wants to remit $200 to Alice in another region of the crypto economy, USD Coin or Tether are the most convenient options. Interposing a non-blockchain intermediary like Western Union into the mix would actually be a step backwards. That would actually introduce an expensive double hop, much like stablecoin remittance in the real world introduces a double hop. But at least for now, the double hop and user fee problems prevent stablecoins from being a competitive remittance vehicle. And plenty of work remains to be done, if they're ever to get to ubiquity. And that's our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. This episode was edited by Adrian Blust, and you can send us an email at podcast@coindesk.com. We'll be back tomorrow with another news roundup. And just a reminder that CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice.